Chapter 7. Comparison of the extent of it. But to say there are hardly any people to be seen there is far from being true in fact, and whoever thinks fit to look into the churches and meeting houses on the Sunday or other public days will find there are very great numbers of people there. Or if he thinks fit to view the market and see how the large shambles, called Cardinal Wolsey's butchery, are furnished with meat, and the rest of the market stocked with other provisions, must acknowledge that it is not for a few people that all those things are provided. A person very curious, and on whose veracity I think I may depend, going through the market in this town, told me that he reckoned upwards of 600 country people on horseback and on foot, with baskets and other carriage, who had all of them brought something or other to town to sell, besides the butchers, and what came in carts and wagons. It happened to be my lot to be once at this town at the time when a very fine new ship, which was built there for some merchants of London, was to be launched. And if I may give my guess at the numbers of people which appeared on the shore, in the houses, and on the river, I believe I am much within compass, if I say there were 20,000 people to see it. But this is only a guess, or they might come a great way to see the sight, or the town may be declined farther since that. But a view of the town is one of the surest rules for a gross estimate. It is true here is no settled manufacture. The French refugees, when they first came over to England, began a little to take to this place, and some merchants attempted to set up a linen manufacture in their favor, but it has not met with so much success as was expected, and at present I find very little of it. The poor people are, however, employed, as they are all over these counties, in spinning wool for other towns where manufactures are settled. The country round Ipswich, as are all the counties so near the coast, is applied chiefly to corn, of which a very great quantity is continually shipped off for London, and sometimes they load corn here for Holland, especially if the market abroad is encouraging. They have 12 parish churches in this town, with 3 or 4 meetings, but there are not so many Quakers here as at Colchester, and no Anabaptists or Antipedo-Baptists, that I could hear of at least. There is no meeting house of that denomination. There is one meeting house for the Presbyterians, one for the Independents, and one for the Quakers. The first is as large and as fine a building of that kind as most on this side of England, and the inside the best finished of any I have seen, London not excepted. That for the Independents is a handsome new-built building, but not so gay or so large as the other. There is a great deal of very good company in this town, and though there are not so many of the gentry here as at Bury, yet there are more here than in any other town in the county, and I observed, particularly, that the company you meet with here are generally persons well informed of the world, and who have something very solid and entertaining in their society. This may happen, perhaps, by their frequent conversing with those who have been abroad, and by their having a remnant of gentlemen and masters of ships among them who have seen more of the world than the people of an inland town are likely to have seen. I take this town to be one of the most agreeable places in England for families who have lived well, but may have suffered in our late calamities of stocks and bubbles, to retreat to, where they may live within their own compass. And several things indeed recommend it to such. 1. Good houses at very easy rents. 2. An airy, clean, and well-governed town. 3. Very agreeable and improving company almost of every kind. 4. A wonderful plenty of all manner of provisions, whether flesh or fish, and very good of the kind. 5. Those provisions very cheap, so that a family may live cheaper here than in any town in England of its bigness within such a small distance from London. 6. Easy passage to London, either by land or water, the coach going through to London in a day. The Lord Viscount Hereford has a very fine seat and park in this town. The house indeed is old built, but very commodious. It is called Christ Church, having been, as it is said, a priory religious house in former times. The Green and Park is a great addition to the pleasantness of this town, the inhabitants being allowed to divert themselves there with walking, bowling, etc. The large spire steeple, which formerly stood upon, that they call the Tower Church, was blown down by a great storm of wind many years ago, and in its a fall did much damage to the church. The government of this town is by two bailiffs, as at Yarmouth. Mr. Camden says they are chosen out of 12 burgesses called portmen, and 2 justices out of 24 more. There has been lately a very great struggle between the two parties for the choice of these 2 magistrates, which at this amicable conclusion, namely, that they chose one of either side, so that neither party having the victory, it is to be hoped it may be a means to allay the heats and unneighborly feuds which such things breed in towns so large as this is. They send 2 members to Parliament, whereof those at this time are Sir William Thompson, Recorder of London, and Colonel Negus, Deputy Master of the Horse to the King. There are some things very curious to be seen here, however some superficial writers have been ignorant of them. Dr. Beeston, an eminent physician, began a few years ago a physic garden adjoining to his house in this town. And as he is particularly curious, and, as I was told, exquisitely skilled in botanic knowledge, so he has been not only very diligent, but successful too, in making a collection of rare and exotic plants, such as are scarce to be equaled in England. One Mr. White, a surgeon, resides also in this town. But before I speak of this gentleman, I must observe that I say nothing from personal knowledge. Though if I did, I have too good an opinion of his sense to believe he would be pleased with being flattered or complimented in print. But I must be true to matter of fact. This gentleman has begun a collection or chamber of rarities, and with good success too. I acknowledge I had not the opportunity of seeing them, but I was told there are some things very curious in it, as particularly a seahorse carefully preserved, and perfect in all its parts, 2 Roman urns full of ashes of human bodies, and supposed to be above 1700 years old, besides a great many valuable medals and ancient coins. My friend who gave me this account, and of whom I think I may say he speaks without bias, mentions this gentleman, Mr. White, with some warmth as a very valuable person in his particular employ of a surgeon. I only repeat his words. Mr. White, says he, to whom the whole town and country are greatly indebted, and obliged to pray for his life, is our most skillful surgeon. These, I say, are his own words, and I add nothing to them but this, that it is happy for a town to have such a surgeon, as it is for a surgeon to have such a character. The country round Ipswich, as if qualified on purpose to accommodate the town for building of ships, is an inexhaustible storehouse of timber, of which, now their trade of building ships is abated, they send very great quantities to the king's building yards at Chatham, which by water is so little a way that they often run to it from the mouth of the river at Harwich in one tide. From Ipswich I took a turn into the country to Hadley, principally to satisfy my curiosity, and see the place where that famous martyr and pattern of charity and religious zeal in Queen Mary's time, Dr. Roland Taylor, was put to death. The inhabitants, who have a wonderful veneration for his memory, show the very place where the stake which he was bound to was set up, and they have put a stone upon it which nobody will remove. But it is a more lasting monument to him, that he lives in the hearts of the people, I say more lasting than a tomb of marble would be, for the memory of that good man will certainly never be out of the poor people's minds, as long as this island shall retain the Protestant religion among them. How long that may be, as things are going, and if the detestable conspiracy of the Papists now on foot should succeed, I will not pretend to say. a little to the left is Sudbury, which stands upon the River Stour, mentioned above, a river which parts the counties of Suffolk and Essex, and which is within these few years made navigable to this town, though the navigation does not, it seems, answer the charge, at least not to advantage. I know nothing for which this town is remarkable, except for being very populous and very poor. They have a great manufacture of sais and perpetuanas, and multitudes of poor people are employed in working them, but the number of the poor is almost ready to eat up the rich. However, this town sends two members to Parliament, though it is under no form of government particularly to itself other than as a village, the head magistrate whereof is a constable. Near adjoining to it is a village called Long Melford, and a very long one it is, from which I suppose it had that addition to its name. It is full of very good houses, and, as they told me, is richer, and has more wealthy masters of the manufacture in it, than in Sudbury itself. Here and in the neighborhood are some ancient families of good note. Particularly here is a fine dwelling, the ancient seat of the Cordles, whereof Sir William Cordle was master of the rolls, in the time of Queen Elizabeth. But the family is now extinct, the last heir, Sir John Cordle, being killed by a fall from his horse, died unmarried, leaving three sisters co-heiresses to a very noble estate, most of which, if not all, is now centered on the only surviving sister, and with her in marriage is given to Mr. Firebrass, eldest son of Sir Basil Firebrass, formerly a flourishing merchant in London, but reduced by many disasters. His family now rises by the good fortune of his son, who proves to be a gentleman of very agreeable parts, and well esteemed in the country. From this part of the country, I returned northwest by Lenham, to visit St. Edmundsbury, a town of which other writers have talked very largely, and perhaps a little too much. It is a town famed for its pleasant situation and wholesome air, the Montpelier of Suffolk, and perhaps of England. This must be attributed to the skill of the monks of those times, who chose so beautiful a situation for the seat of their retirement, and who built here the greatest, and, in its time, the most flourishing monastery in all these parts of England, I mean the monastery of St. Edmund the Martyr. It was, if we believe antiquity, a house of pleasure in more ancient times, or to speak more properly, a court of some of the Saxon or East Angle kings, and, as Mr. Camden says, was even then called a royal village, though it much better merits that name now, it being the town of all this part of England, in proportion to its bigness, most thronged with gentry, people of the best fashion, and the most polite conversation. This beauty and healthiness of its situation was no doubt the occasion which drew the clergy to settle here, for they always chose the best places in the country to build in, either for richness of soil, or for health and pleasure in the situation of their religious houses. For the like reason, I doubt not, they translated the bones of the martyred King St. Edmund to this place, for it is a vulgar error to say he was murdered here. His martyrdom, it is plain, was at Oxenor in Ilsden, near Harleston, on the Waveney, in the farthest northern verge of the county, but Segebert, king of the East Angles, had built a religion's house in this pleasant rich part of the county, and as the monks began to taste the pleasure of the place, they procured the body of this saint to be removed hither, which soon increased the wealth and revenues of their house. By the zeal of that day, in going on pilgrimage to the shrine of the blessed St. Edmund. We read, however, that after this the Danes, under King Sweno, overrunning this part of the country, destroyed this monastery, and burned it to the ground, with the church and town. But see the turn religion gives to things in the world. His son, King Canidus, at first a pagan and a tyrant, and the most cruel ravager of all that crew, coming to turn Christian, and being touched in conscience for the soul of his father, in having robbed God and his holy martyr St. Edmund, sacrilegiously destroying the church, and plundering the monastery, I say, touched with remorse, and, as the monks pretend, Terrified with a vision of St. Edmund appearing to him, he rebuilt the house, the church, and the town also, and very much added to the wealth of the abbot and his fraternity, offering his crown at the feet of St. Edmund, giving the house to the monks, town and all, so that they were absolute lords of the town, and governed it by their steward for many ages. He also gave them a great many good lordships, which they enjoyed till the general suppression of abbeys, in the time of Henry VIII. But I am neither writing the history, or searching the antiquity of the abbey, or town. My business is the present state of the place. The abbey is demolished. Its ruins are all that is to be seen of its glory. Out of the old building, two very beautiful churches are built, and serve the two parishes, into which the town is divided, and they stand both in one churchyard. Here it was, in the pathway between these two churches, that a tragical, and almost unheard of act of barbarity was committed, which made the place less pleasant for some time than it used to be, when Arundel Coke Esquire, a barrister at law, of a very ancient family, attempted, with the assistance of a barbarous assassin, to murder in cold blood, and in the arms of hospitality, Edward Crisp Esquire, his brother-in-law, leading him out from his own house, where he had invited him, his wife and children, to supper, I say, leading him out in the night, on pretense of going to see some friend, that was known to them both. But in this churchyard, giving a signal to the assassin he had hired, he attacked him with a hedge bill, and cut him, as one might say, almost in pieces, and when they did not doubt of his being dead, they left him. His head and face was so mangled, that it may be said to be next to a miracle, that he was not quite killed. Yet so Providence directed for the exemplary punishment of the assassins, that the gentlemen recovered to detect them, who, though he outlived the assault, were both executed as they deserved, and Mr. Crisp is yet alive. They were condemned on the statute for defacing and dismembering, called the Coventry Act. But this accident does not at all lessen the pleasure and agreeable delightful show of the town of Barry. It is crowded with nobility and gentry, and all sorts of the most agreeable company, and as the company invites, so there is the appearance of pleasure upon the very situation, and they that live at Barry are supposed to live there for the sake of it. The Lord Jermyn, afterwards Lord Dover, and, since his lordship's decease, Sir Robert Davers, enjoyed the most delicious seat of Rushbrook, near this town. The present members of Parliament for this place are Jermyn Davers and James Reynolds, Esquires. Mr. Harvey, afterwards created Lord Harvey, by King William, and since that made Earl of Bristol by King George, lived many years in this town, leaving a noble and pleasantly situated house in Lincolnshire, for the more agreeable living on a spot so completely qualified for a life of delight as this of Barry. The Duke of Grafton, now Lord Lieutenant of Ireland, has also a stately house at Euston, near this town, which he enjoys in right of his mother, daughter to the Earl of Arlington, one of the chief ministers of state in the reign of King Charles II, and who made the second letter in the word cabal, a word formed by that famous satirist Andrew Marvel, to represent the five heads of the politics of that time, as the word smictimnus was on a former occasion. I shall believe nothing so scandalous of the ladies of this town, and the country round it as a late writer insinuates, that the ladies round the country appear mighty gay and agreeable at the time of the fair in this town I acknowledge. One hardly sees such a Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.